Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality. Listener, if you're running a hospitality business, you already know the work doesn't stop. And most of the time, it's not even the guests that wear you out. It's everything happening behind the scenes. That's why I'm really glad to introduce you to Lodgify, our sponsor for this episode. Lodgify is an all-in-one platform that helps short-term rental hosts and hospitality operators stay organized without needing a dozen different tools. You can manage reservations, keep your calendars synced, communicate with guests, and even collect payments all in one place. And if part of your goal this year is to drive more direct bookings, Lodgify also makes it easy to build your own website so guests can book directly with you. Plus, and I love this one, they include free onboarding so you're not figuring everything out on your own. If you like to spend less time managing the chaos and more time focused on hospitality, try Lodgify with a 20% discount on all their yearly and bi-yearly plans with our code THM20. And that's THM20. Now, back to the show. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. And today, listeners and viewers, I'm excited about this one. I've got Jessica and Damian Zuwawi, founders of Oakwell Beer Spa, here with me today. And listen, I think we're going to have a unique journey here because just hearing the word beer spa starts making you think about what's going on. So Jessica and Damian, welcome to the show. I think maybe you kick it off on, you know, high level. What have you created? What is the beer spa?
Yeah. So we're the founders of Oakwell Beer Spa, which is a social wellness experience that combines a day spa with a craft beer and wine tap room into one. So on one side of our spa, we have a tap room, we have a self-pour system, we have a sampling of local craft beer, wine, cider, non-alcoholic beverages. And it's really our communal space where you come and hang out, socialize before and after your spa experience. And then we have four private spa suites. So inside these rooms, there's an infrared sauna, a rain shower, and a hydrotherapy tub that's infused with hops, malt, and then your choice of herbs. It is not Coors, it's not PBR. I'm sorry to disappoint you. That's the number one question that we get asked is it real beer? Can I drink the beer in the tub? You can, but it's probably not going to taste very good. So we don't use yeast. It's not fermented. In the brewer's world, is the equivalent to wort, which is pre-fermented beer. So it's basically the hops and malt that's infused into the water, along with different aromatic herbs. So we have an energizing IPA blend, a muscle relaxing lager that has arnica that's great for your hiking, your snowboarding. And then we have a calming amber as well. And so you get to kind of pick how you're feeling that day and what you want infused into the tub. So you get access to this room for 90 minutes. And of course, if you need to refill your beverage while you're in there, you don't need to leave the comfort of your private spa suite. We have room service. So you just push a little doorbell. One of our beer therapists will come and refill your beverage for you. And then after your 90-minute session in your private spa suite, you can add on a 15, 30, or 60-minute massage. And these are high-tech zero-gravity massage chairs. So these are robotics-enabled massages. So you basically, it's our unofficial nap room where you go and just really chill out after the private spa suite. And then, of course, head back to the tap room afterwards for as long as you'd like to hang out.
I love it. What a cool business model. And I want to get back to how what goes on there, because I'm curious about the business model as I'm building out a wellness resort right now. And so I want to hear all about what you all are making. But let's talk about the journey. So many people want to understand that. And listeners, I know you always listen to the episodes. I always start with what was your first job in hospitality, but I think this is your first job in hospitality. Am I right or am I wrong?
Nope. So actually, I started working when I was 15 years old in a pizza restaurant. So I worked in restaurants and bars all through high school, all through college. And then I started my professional corporate career after that. But like most people do, I started in a mom and pop pizza restaurant, 15 years old, getting paid under the table and cash owning the restaurant. But yeah, worked my way up to fine dining, did catering, did bartending, all sorts of things.
So you did definitely do it. And Damian, what about you?
Yeah, I actually worked in a cafe and bakery in France back then when I was a teenager at the same age of Jess. And then when I started to work, actually was involved a lot with the travel industry, many hotels in the Caribbean and Mexico, and then in New York City in the travel industry. So hospitality has never been a secret for us. Actually, our obsession about hospitality came from those experiences we had before.
I love to hear. Now I'm embarrassed. My research was not very good today as I was going through it, but I love that you have that background. And so you set a base for yourself as you were starting this, but you mentioned you had corporate roles, both of you. You both had corporate jobs. I had one as well. And there's a lot of people listening now, like, yeah, I'm stuck in this job. You know, it's getting stressful, the long hours. How did you all decide, all right, it's time to jump out of this? Because sometimes you get those golden handcuffs, the salary's good, the benefits are good, they get you just enough paid where you don't leave. How did you decide that, all right, let's do something?
Yeah, that's a great point. And we were having that exact same feeling. So we both had corporate jobs. We were living and working in New York City at the time that we met. That's when, you know, we met, we got married. Damien worked in sales and marketing. I worked in HR and operations. We were living the life in New York. I mean, it was a nice lifestyle. We were in our early 20s at the time, enjoying everything that the city has to offer, going out every weekend, taking weekend trips to upstate New York. We had good salaries. But at the end of the day, we really felt professionally unfulfilled. Like, we felt like we could do more. We were always looking to take on new projects at work, take on new things. And we just felt like we were really stuck. So when we would get home from work, we would brainstorm business ideas. We knew pretty quickly we didn't want to do a restaurant or a coffee shop or something that's been done a million times before. We wanted to do something unique, but we also didn't want to completely reinvent the wheel. Damien's from France originally, and I was fortunate enough to travel internationally at a young age. So we knew that there's a lot of interesting businesses that exist out in the world that just maybe haven't been brought to the United States yet. So the month after getting married, we decided if we're going to do something crazy, now's the time to do it before we have, you know, responsibilities like kids and a mortgage and all of these things. So we decided to quit our corporate jobs at the same time. We sold everything we owned. We packed two backpacks and we headed off on what was to be an indefinite round the world trip looking for interesting business ideas. And we weren't going to come home until we found the perfect concept that we could bring back and scale in the United States. So we ended up traveling for a little over a year. We went to 25 countries. We went all over Europe, Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. And about halfway into our trip is when we discovered our first beer spa.
Now I want to rewind a little bit. All right. So you're married. You said 2 months before you went everywhere? The month after. So a month and a half, you're sitting down. How does this conversation come up? Because this is what I'm curious with, right? Like, all right, you just got married. It's an exciting time. You know, got double income, no kids, New York City. But you say around the table one night, what happens? Are you having a glass of wine? Set the scene for me of how this comes up.
You had that idea of traveling the world way before. And I had the opportunity to travel a lot to Europe as a village. And in Europe, yeah, usually universities, education are pushing you to do some exchanges. But for you, you always had in mind that, you know, the race in America is you study, pay back your loans, and you need to work. And I think you were stuck in that situation until a corporate job could kind of like help you to accomplish that idea of like, okay, traveling makes sense. When are we doing this? Well, when we got married, it was, well, now we're stuck together. We're entrepreneurs. There is only one promise that we need to make to each other is we will only come back when we have the idea. So traveling for traveling was not for us an option. Traveling to discover, to fulfill ourselves. But again, as a young, ambitious entrepreneurs wannabe, right? I'll put it that way. We're going to come back with an idea. And that was key. Yeah. Plus your willingness. All right. I want to travel. I want to leave this. Let's do this. Let's do this together. And so going back to the premise of looking for 90 in the hospitality industry, we've always been passionate about the hospitality industry. We always loved hosting people, right? Cooking for people. which a lot of people love, but cooking for people and opening a restaurant where you have food costs and all of that is very different than cooking with love and cooking with cooking for just 5 or 10
people. You have a passion for you.
And company. So we were passionate about a big idea, bringing people together, having them spending a good time. And during our travel, we were in Poland. It was a day, a rainy day in June 2018 in Poland, in the middle of the mountains. And it was rainy. We didn't want to hike under the rain and just open a TripAdvisor and look at things to do. And when we look at the beer spot and say, oh my gosh, that's intriguing. 3 minutes later, we checked in and the rest is history. It was the most relaxing experience we ever had. Just went crazy on that idea when I just fell asleep after 5 minutes soaking in the tub. And I promise you, I didn't drink more than a sip of beer at the time. It was just the most relaxing experience. And we can go into the details of the picture. But through that, just went crazy. I was like, we need to do this. We need to bring this back. Let's do this. And I say, wait. Drink a pint of beer and let's see if you want to still do it. No, actually, we were very analytical. So we actually run numbers, look at markets. But most importantly, during those travels, we actually tried as many spas as possible around the world. So we discovered just a specific part of the whole discovery, the process. We did beer spas, wine spas. We did Hansen, Jingjuban in South Korea, Hansen in Japan, those big thalassotherapy spas on the coastal part of France and Spain, those spas in Germany where everyone is naked and you feel, oh my gosh, pretty young. That was just eye-opening to us. And we discovered things that are not only applicable in the US, but we discovered a lot of things that could be applicable in the US in a very different environment by Americanizing.
Right. And so, Jessica, what was it that I'm sure you saw a bunch of other things on that trip? I'm sure there's some ideas that didn't make the list or the final three or two. Was it just like lightning struck you as you were sitting there and you got the chills on your arms that you knew this was it? What happened?
It was definitely the feeling, right? It was like, this is really neat. Beer is huge in the United States. Wellness is huge. It's something that I've always been passionate about, going to spas since a young age with my mom, with my sister. And I always felt like there was something missing in the spa industry. Like, it's very transactional. You go, you get your massage, you get harassed for a membership, and then leave. Or they're really stuffy and corporate. Like, they look like they're stuck in the 90s with the dark oak furniture and the thick carpeting. And there's whale sounds and rainforest noise in the background. But it's not really like a social experience. You go with, your partner, or you go with your mom or your sister, thinking you're going to have like a fun girl's spa day. But then you don't actually get to socialize because the environment's not conducive to that. So I really felt like this was filling a gap that we had in the marketplace. Plus, as a craft beer lover, I thought this was a really interesting addition to the spa experience. I felt like it could also open the spa experience up to men. Like, in the United States, spas are traditionally really geared towards women, from the decor, from the services. It's not a place that men feel totally comfortable going. So by plugging the beer aspect in, it was like, hey, I feel like guys could get on board with this. It's like, hey, come to the spa with me. I don't know, but give me a beer, then maybe you can talk me into it. So I felt like it just really addressed a lot of things that I saw were missing in the U.S. And to your point, we saw a lot of cool things around the world. We went to Tokyo. We did Mario Kart racing in the streets of Japan, where, you know, we're in a full body Yoshi suit. Driving an actual like go-kart.
Dangerous. I've seen the videos of that, like people do it, right? It's a little dangerous.
There's actual like semi-trucks behind us. So it's like, oh, the liability. I need more of this. There's a lot of cool things, but I just didn't see that they were scalable. It was one of the biggest things. We didn't want to be a mom and pop business owner for the rest of our lives. We wanted to find an idea that we could take nationwide and that we could open, you know, countless stores across the U.S. So I think that scalability portion was where a lot of these unique concepts failed our kind of checklist.
Very cool. And so look, a lot of people have ideas and they have that beer in the beer spot. Like, oh, we should bring this back to the U.S. This would be amazing. But how did you start then putting some action steps to that? Because it is the difference of the dreamers and the doers. How did you start being the doers and start creating this? What happened after you left the spa that day?
Yeah.
Yeah. We agreed on trying all of the other beer spas, different other spa concepts, just to understand what is the business model of day spas. And then we really tackle numbers and analytic portions of it by really, first of all, running a business, financial modeling more than any other thing, marketing research, on looking at which specific markets we should really try to implement that. Different markets such as Boston, Chicago, Seattle, San Diego, Portland, Austin, Texas, and Denver, looking at the beer industry in the specific markets, the tourism, but as well the appetite for wellness and well-being. In Denver, one by far. We've done a lot of mock-up. I remember just doing scratching things on the napkins or in a piece of paper from a printout. We've made a lot of foolish phone calls by simply calling random day spas and asking questions about, their clients.
Yeah, what you did.
Yeah, exactly. Like pretty much just trying to be a secret shopper and just trying to understand how they became the phone. What's their technology? I have been making some reservations that you can sell within the cancellation policies. You can really see the email marketing, the text you receive, and all of that. And it took from getting the idea to really getting started in construction, it took 2 years and a half. 2 years. Sorry, 2 years. And then it took about a year from getting the first nail somewhere demo to actually opening the door for the first guest.
So I'm guessing in that, as you're a young couple trying to get this started, that unless I'm wrong, you don't have millions of dollars sitting around. Did you have to look for investors? Did you go to banks to try to convince them? What was the way that you raise money? Because that's the other big thing. I've got the idea. All right, I'm going to make it happen, but you can't get it funded. How did you figure that out?
Actually, there's two questions. How do you get it funded and how do you get a landlord to tell you, yes, I don't need your money?
So, to Jamie's point, we discovered this idea about 6 months into our travels that we continue traveling for 8 months, putting together business plan, financial models, and then figuring out what city to put it in. We have done a bunch of research, decided on Denver. We landed here with literally still our backpacks on, business plan in hand. And the first thing was to find the money because to your point, did not have a ton of money. We had spent the majority of our life savings when we were traveling the world for, a year plus. So we had a tiny bit of equity to put in, but nothing substantial. So we first had to go to banks and see if they would lend us money. We went to all of the big ones. We went to JP Morgan, Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, a bunch of small local banks, regional banks. Everyone was like, this is a cool idea. I want to come and be a customer, but I'm not able to give you money until you have 2 years of business and P&L under your belt. That we ended up getting a ton of rejection letters. But with that, we're able to go to the city of Denver, who has a really great program through their Office of Economic Development, which gives loans to small business owners and founders that are not able to get traditional funding. So we're actually able to turn in all those rejection letters that we received to be like, hey, we can't get funding elsewhere. Can you help us? There were some restrictions with that in terms of we needed to be in an area that was in need of economic development. So the business had to be located in certain geographic areas in the city that they were trying to revitalize. And then they also didn't want to go in 100% on it because they were also like, I don't know, this idea is strange. I've never heard of your spa before. So they said they would give us half of the funding if someone else would give us the other half. So we ended up finding a local nonprofit lender that does SBA loans to more high risk startups like us. We're a woman to own business. And so that was able to get us into some programs. So they ended up giving us half, the city of Denver gave us half, But what was really more difficult was finding a commercial space, which we weren't anticipating. We thought it'd be really hard to get the money, but easy to find a place. But at the time when we moved here, the vacancy rate for commercial spaces was 2%. So there was like hardly any commercial spaces of the square footage that we needed. And most of the landlords wanted proven tenants that they knew were going to pay their rent, that they had a restaurant. So it was hard to even get landlords to talk to us, to even give us a showing of their space. So we ended up finding a somewhat smaller property owner, but they, you know, they're like mid-size. It wasn't the large guys didn't want to talk to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, with our financial projections and our business plan that we had put together, we're able to prove like, hey, we've done our research. We know what we're doing. We have the money. So we ended up finally getting a commercial space in the Rhino neighborhood in Denver, which is the hip and trendy kind of brewery neighborhood.
It's a perfect spot for you, it sounds like. I know that area. So a good spot for you to be in. And so, well, some people don't realize, too, is when you go to go get money, you, I don't know if you had to, but when you get an SBA loan, that's great to have. We get to personally guarantee that loan, especially if you're a new business. So for listeners out there, because I've realized a lot of people haven't done what we've done, like, yeah, you're saying, yeah, I'll cover it. And if you don't, they're going to come after everything you got. But it sounds like you just showed up with your backpack. So what was there left to take?
It's like, we don't own a house. We don't have anything really for them to take. So at that point, the personal
All right. So you've got the money. You find the space. I've been looking at the pictures. It's a really cool design. And listeners, if you're not driving, just pause this. Check out their website, oakwell.com, and you'll get to see what they've created here. It's a really beautiful setup. Was that what it looked like from the start?
No.
It's funny, but this was... It was in rough shape. Now, the building was built in 1904, so it was over 100 years old. It had been a variety of different things over time. Most recently, it was a church, but then it was vacant for several years. It had no heating or air conditioning. It had minimal electrical. The water line was undersized. So it had a lot of work that needed to be done. There were no storefront windows or doors. It was just like a wooden door. And the neighborhood that we were in is, you know, it's in need of economic development. It's an up and coming neighborhood. We were on the outskirts of Rhino, so we weren't in the center that's already, you know, popular and trendy. It was very much, in need of a lot of work. So even though we had funding, we were very underfunded. We did not calculate our construction cost accurately because ultimately, like, how do you know how much it's going to cost to build out a beer spa? But we ended up finding a general contractor who was very, very nice and let us borrow his toolbox, basically. And so he brought all of these different power tools and things for us to use, and he would teach us how to use them. So the majority of the construction that was not mechanical, electrical, or plumbing related, it was Damien and I doing. So we would go to Home Depot and buy cabinetry that we turned into the tap wall. We installed it. We painted everything. We ran all of our IT cables. A lot of our furniture, I'd say 70% of our furniture and our equipment came from auctions. So this was in 2019, 2020. And so this was during COVID. A lot of businesses were closing. But fortunately for us, that means that all of this equipment was now available for auction. So our walk-in cooler, for example, which, as you probably know, costs like $10,000 to $20,000 new, we were able to get from a Subway that was going out of business an hour north of us in Fort Collins. It was 20 years old, the walk-in cooler. It was very rusty and quite gross inside, but we're able to get it for $200. We paid another $200 for a moving company to relocate it to us. I had to do quite a lot of work getting all of the rust off of it and repainting it. Having someone come out and do a maintenance on the motor and things like that. But we were able to all in spend, I think it was like $500 on a walk-in cooler that should have cost us $20,000. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's for your beer. That's for your kegs, right? That's where you're putting all the kegs?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into it. Damien and I did a lot of the construction ourselves. But the good thing was we learned so much that now when we're building out our other locations, we can have an intelligent conversation with the general contractor. We know how plumbing works. We know how electrical works. I was very involved in the permitting process as well for our first location. We didn't hire a permit expediter. That was me. And so I spent countless hours researching building code. So it really set us up for success and having the knowledge to be able to tackle these projects. Later on, you know, when we opened our second location now, yeah, we hired a professional GC, and now I know how to, what they're saying and what they're referring to, and know enough to be dangerous with dealing with construction work.
Gosh, listeners, rewind that last 3 minutes. That's really the life of starting a business. This is what it takes. You have to really realize, am I going to leave my corporate job where you get to kind of show up and have your sick days and your vacations, or are you really going to hustle and create what you all have created? So let's fast forward, Damien, the opening day. Well, what day was opening day? Do you remember the date?
Yeah, February 26, 2021. Yeah, right when actually COVID restrictions were lifting. So it actually was very helpful for us because most of the people who came where they were hungry to get out and have things to do, date night with their significant others. And I think the local news were avid of stories like this and incredible concept like a beer spot. So it really played in our favor. And, you know, opening day is one of the most, actually, it's one of the most important day of the life of your store. First of all, what the heck is a beer spot, right?
Right.
Everyone wore their eyes. And secondly, when they come in, you've got only 3 seconds to wow them. So we really focused our efforts on making sure that whenever you come in, as soon as we open the door for you, everything is impeccable, ready to go, and you're not waiting for your appointments. We're not at the doctor's office. Everything is clean. We're just COVID restrictions just lifted, so people were still wearing their masks. So we really focus on cleanliness, impeccable services, and mostly if we had challenges and issues, keeping them behind doors and not having any guests smelling any type of fires that could erupt. And, you know, since this day, we actually were able to develop our 5-star standard services that we have written down. We were extremely inspired by the Ritz-Carlton, the Four Seasons, and all of the successful hospitality company. But in the meantime, we really wanted to disrupt the industry by really, like, one of our manager would call us like a Michelin star, a casual Michelin.
Michelin casual.
I like that.
You know. Actually, yeah, exactly. It's like you come to a day spa, you must be happy and relaxed. But in the meantime, it doesn't need to be intimidating, and it doesn't need to be stuffy and just white everywhere and soulless, you know. So we really invested our time on sensory marketing, the smell, the service, the way we guide you, the way we talk to you. Perhaps a word, no worries is banned. There's no worries in the day spa. The day spa should be, there's no problem. There's no worries. None of that exists. It is my pleasure. We work people to where they need to go, you know, from booking all the way from your booking on the website or on the phone, all the way to checkout. And everyone after checkout, we're here for you to deliver you the best service. And with that in mind, we aim to become one of the best hospitality company in the US within the next 7 to 10 years. And as you know, it's a people business. You must care. You must be ready. You must be ready to sweat. You must be ready to cry. You must be ready to lose hair. But at the end, you are the service of the guest. And we've realized as well, marketing-wise, that no matter how many emails, text marketing, email marketing, automation, incredible website you have, what really matters is when you come in, everything's unbeatable. And for sure, they will spread the word about the incredible experience they had. And we didn't realize that for the first 6 months. We were always like marketing, Facebook, Google. And really what matters is, Damien and Jess, your best marketing is right now. It's showtime. When you're on stage, that's your best marketing.
Yeah, it's making people feel genuinely cared for. We were just talking about this in a speech I was giving. It's how do you make them feel genuinely cared for? Like, wow, like, Jessica and Damien, I know the owners and they knew me and they knew I like this beer and they knew like I like my setup this way. And once you get them, it's like if you get them there 3 times, you got a fan for life and they tell their friends and it continues on and on and on, which you all know. And I'm looking at your Instagram page as you're talking. It's just looks so much fun. I can't wait to come by and check this out. But I want to know a little bit more about the business model because you mentioned something at the beginning don't know if we said on the show or backstage about some touchless services that you have here. And so it looks like this is a business where you can do a couple of upsells, right? People can hang out and they can stay there for a while. And then you, maybe not as labor heavy as some traditional spas, because you have some touchless service and it's kind of self-guided, it looks like, in some of these things. Am I hitting the right thing? Is that how you think about your business?
Yeah. And so when we were creating the business model, we talked to a lot of spa owners. We, to Damien, what have you mentioned earlier, we would make calls to business owners and ask them questions, but then we also had friends and family members who've been in the spa industry. So we wanted to know, what are the biggest pain points when it comes to spas and food and beverage? And really make sure that we address those when coming up with this business, because it's, you know, it's something brand new. We can really make of it whatever we want. So one of the biggest things that we heard was labor is a big challenge, staffing, right? Especially in the spa world, massage therapists, estheticians, they're very hard to find. They're hard to retain. And then if they call out sick, then you're calling and canceling their entire appointment book for the day. So figuring out how to have static services that are not reliant upon a specific service provider was a big one for us. So what we did is we created really a self-guided journey where we have our beer therapists that are there to assist you and really provide that hospitality touch points. But they're not the ones actually that need to be, like, John has to be the one providing your massage today. And if he calls out sick, no one else can replace. So we have a self-pour tap wall as well. So it uses an RFID card where the guests can pour their own beverage. We are always there. We walk them through a curated tasting before we have them select their beer. We always help them with their pour. Everyone thinks they know how to pour beer, but it typically ends up with them things going mess. So we're always there to re-pour their beer for them if they don't do it properly. And so we're guiding them through the experience. But again, we don't have that one-on-one service provider business model. And then same with the private spa suite. So it's a completely private room. There's no service provider inside. But we have a team that cleans and disinfects the rooms in between each service, prepares it, especially for whatever you're celebrating. So, for example, you tell us that you just got married. Well, we'll hang a congratulations banner in the room. We'll put up candles and rose petals. So really curating the room to what you're there to experience. And then the massage chairs as well are high-tech robotics-enabled massage chairs that we, of course, ensure that you're comfortable and help set up the pressure and, you know, set the timer for it, but it's not something that you need a specific service provider for.
Oh, I love that model. You know, my friends, there's a lot of spas here. I'm in Miami Beach, and so there's a lot of different spas here, and you get to try a lot of things, but the Carillon Wellness Resort is one where I have some friends there, and it was amazing. When I started seeing the business model, they have traditional. I don't know. You want to use the cryo for 3 minutes? That's $99. You want to go into the salt chamber room for 20 minutes? That's $99. You want to go on these water beds that massage you for 20 minutes? I was like, oh my God, this is great. You don't need, they just have, like you said, they don't have a beer therapist, but they have that person who guides you and comes back and checks on you. And I love that model of what you all have created. And I think you're going to see that more and more in the world of hospitality. So you're on to something. And so I have a couple questions left. We start to see the younger generation now. They say it. I'm not that because I still have my beer and wine, but they're not drinking as much. Are you starting to see that? Are you thinking you have to adjust to it? Or do you think there's enough of people who are fans of the beer spa that are going to keep coming?
We've seen that. And we actually started right during COVID. And after COVID, I think people really understood the importance of their well-being and wellness needs and understand how their best investment is actually their body and their soul. But let's be honest. We think that wine, beer, sodas, whatever is not good for you are not going actually anywhere. Yes, there's less people consuming less of this, but that's because they are as well balancing it with something else.
Yes.
And we've seen that trend since day one. So we put in place kombucha, non-alcoholic tea, hop tea,
CBD water.
CBD's water. Mood improvement drinks. There's so many different new startups every day in Denver. They come and knock on the door and ask us if we want to try. And then we think that, okay, let's try it on tap and see if it works. And, you know, overall, let me tell this. In our business model, on average, people drink an average of two pints and two glasses. So they're not coming here for a party. They come here,
yeah.
They plug the beer, the wine, or the cider, or any drinks to help to ease into relaxation. Pretty much like a bunch of French people around the cafe table drinking a glass of wine, watching.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And we realize that really what they come for is to reset, reconnect with their significant others and their friends, and really just having a fun time. Don't get me wrong. We had a few crazy people out there. Now, if you need young generations, we use different type of marketing tactics to communicate to that younger generations that it's not because we'll call the beer spa that you're going to bath in beer and drown in beer. There is wine, cider, and all that kind of beverages. And actually, we do cross partnerships with different non-alcoholic beverage companies that helps us to spread that message. So overall, it has been extremely stable for us.
Yeah, I think that, you know, to what Damien said, I don't think alcohol is going anywhere. I think people are just learning to drink more in moderation and to balance it with things that are healthier for you. But alcohol is here to stay, and it's not an integral part of our spa experience. We have plenty of people that come and don't drink alcohol at all and just enjoy a kombucha, but still get the therapeutic benefits of bathing in the hops and malt.
I love it. And it's non-alcoholic hops and ball, right? I was looking, it's like you're not going into the beer tub. It's really like the herbs and the malt that you have there. So, all right, last question before I ask the final one. I'm asking for your 5-year business plan, but what is it like? What are you most excited about for a year from now?
Yeah, a year from now, I think we'll be closing on our first franchisee. And that's a big deal for us because this is a proof that we were able to prove we're business model with first a underfunded prototype downtown Denver, then a German car that we park right now in South Denver in Heinz Ranch, where we have everything to prove that this is successful, and surrounding ourselves with the right people. I think as fellow entrepreneurs, we always try to surround ourselves with people who know what we don't know, so we can learn, collaborate together, and build this amazing thing. So that's a year from now. It's still having an incredible team. We care about our team. We love our team. They must hopefully stay with us, which they do. And I hope that I still retain my team from a year from now.
That's amazing. So I can feel the passion you have, and I'm sure the team loves working for you. Now, last question of the podcast here. If you could go back to young Jessica and Damien, who are about to start out on this journey across Europe, what advice are you whispering into their ear before they head out?
Yeah.
You know, I think one thing that I told myself a lot when I was making the decision to leave the corporate world, it was scary, right? You have a paycheck, you have a nice place that you're living this lifestyle, and it's scary to have this uncertainty of not knowing what, you know, where your next paycheck's going to come from. How long are you going to be traveling for? What are you going to do after this? But I always just thought to myself, at the end of the day, what's the worst that could happen, right? Like, what, we go traveling, we end up not finding a concept. You know, we have corporate experience, we have college degrees. So at the end of the day, we could always go back and find another job. It's not the best thing in the world. It's not like we would be looking forward to that, but it's like, what's the worst that could happen? We're not going to end up on the streets. Like, we're not going to, our life is not going to end. We may have to pivot if we don't find a cool concept that we want to bring back. But just reminding myself that worst case scenario isn't that bad. And so just might as well take the leap, because the upside, best case scenario is, you know, what happened to us now, which is we find a really cool idea and we're now living the dream.
I love it.
And
I think for everybody listening, it's amazing advice, Jessica. And, you know, you guys are a couple goals here for everybody, right? You guys cheering each other on. I'm sure there's some hard days when you're getting home or there's some business arguments, I'm sure comes up, but you really are, I can see, have each other's back here. But listeners and viewers, make sure to check out Oakwell. It really is something very cool. And if you're interested in franchising, what's the best way? Do they contact you directly through the website?
Yeah, oakwellfranchise.com, or they can contact us on oakwell.com. hello@oakwell.com, oakwellfranchise.com. We have a sister company, oakwellcosmetics.com, if you want some beer-infused bath
like
and
that.
Well, cosmetics product. It doesn't smell the air, I promise you. And it is very good for your skin and for your hair.
I love it. Well, Jessica and Damien, thank you so much for joining me today. I love learning about what you've created. It really is something unique in hospitality, and I always love seeing something new pop up. Congratulations on what you built, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea to enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.